The Euros, we're inside them. Welcome to episode 3, where we're looking at Group C. That's the Netherlands, who I will no doubt call Holland several times during this podcast, Ukraine, Austria, and North Macedonia. With me are Dave Gibbs.
Hi, everyone.
And Joe Casnelli is joining us. Joe, as you know, by now works for The Times, Reuters, anyone else who'll help him populate his Saving a Euro spreadsheet. All right, Joe?
Very true, and I am open to offers.
We've also got some special guests on this pod. Dutch football expert Michael Statham, Ukrainian knowledge merchant Andrew Todos, and North Macedonian investigator Jordan Lewis Butler. So, the Netherlands. I always like to see them at tournaments, although maybe just for the colour of their kit. Do we have any Netherlands sympathisers here?
I like the Dutch for a party. They travel very well, and they do well when they get to a tournament. But I think the question is, it's when they actually do get to the tournament.
Holland, I've just said it then as well, haven't I? I think that we'll probably all call them Holland at some point, unfortunately. And I do apologise to any listeners from that part of the world. The Netherlands are one of those teams, aren't they? As you say, Gabo. 2014, World Cup semi-finals, came third, then didn't qualify for the next two tournaments. It's quite incredible. Obviously, as a Liverpool fan, I have a little bit of an affinity with the Netherlands, given Virgil van Dijk, who unfortunately won't be there, their captain, and the departing Jorginho Wijnaldum as well, who will be captaining the Netherlands in van Dijk's absence. And despite the fact he's leaving Liverpool, I would very much like him to see him do well. He was a great servant to the club. So there are a bunch of lads who I can get behind. They're no Swiss, put it that way.
Well, let's get straight into it with Michael Statham. That's at Eredivisie Mike on Twitter. He's a writer with Pinnacle and a YouTuber for Football Oranje. That's how you pronounce orange in Dutch. He sat down to talk with us. So, Michael, what is going on with Holland? Because from the outside, it seems like a bit of a mess going into the Euros.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with the manager, Frank de Boer. People all know him from his sort of failings across Europe already, but he's made a lot of sort of mistakes already being the Netherlands boss. And it's just a shame because Ronald Koeman, who was the boss before him, has built up a lot of hard work and put a lot of work into his team and the way they play.
What would you say are de Boer's biggest mistakes that he's made?
For me, it's the player management. He doesn't have them all on side, and the players are being ultra professional at the moment, and they're not trying to give out too much. But you can see from interviews, the looks, the way that de Boer talks about the players, that he just has this, he's quite stubborn. He has his way of playing and a way of saying things to his players, and they're not always very happy with it. I'll give some small examples. So Amuel Gazi was left out of the squad. He received a text to find out, and it was released in like a YouTube interview he had with a journalist that he received it right there. And then it was showing him saying, I've just got a text and I'm not in the squad.
Wow.
Jasper Cillessen is a number one goalkeeper. He had a positive test for coronavirus, and Frank de Boer knew this before he selected his final squad for the Euros. Cillessen's the number one keeper. And then de Boer actually changed his mind and said, no, you're not going to be in the squad at all. You can't come to the Euros. So again, just really strange decision-making from him. I mean, tactically also not that astute. He decides to play a 5-3-2 against Scotland in a friendly with a defensive midfielder as well. When you expect to have lots of the ball, it didn't work.
It's quite interesting. I saw Cillessen today was kicking off about it, and he was criticising de Boer, and he wasn't going too strongly because he didn't want to upset the balance in the Holland camp. But do you reckon that's something that could happen? I mean, in the past, there has been some trouble with Holland at tournaments, isn't there, within the squad. Is it primed to explode?
Oh, I mean, I can see it only going one way, and that is the Netherlands getting knocked out earlier than they should be in the tournament, and then things sort of spilling over with de Boer getting the sack. It's kind of what people thought might have happened once de Boer took charge, but they thought, oh, give him another chance. We'll see whether things can change, or whether actually Netherlands could keep up the form they had before under Koeman. I mean, Koeman just put in all this work into getting these young players through to become key players in the first team. Frenkie de Jong, Matos de Ligt, name but two. And he created this old-fashioned Dutch 4-3-3, lots of pacey players, lots of technical players, and it seems to be lost now under de Boer, and it's just a massive shame.
Is there a feeling that, I mean, in a way that Koeman has, you know, they decided they're going to keep him at Barca now, but obviously he's not been that valued there, you know, with Laporta saying, oh, I'm going to take 2 weeks to decide your future, we're not sure about it. Is there a sense among Dutch people or among Oranje fans that Koeman made a big mistake from walking away from Holland ahead of the Euros?
I think Koeman really, really just wanted the Barcelona job. It seemed to be one of his biggest ambitions, that and the Dutch national team job. And he sensed that was his chance to go and do things with Barcelona. And as you can see, it didn't go 100% the way he wanted it at Barcelona. He's going to stay on for another season where he looks fit to see if he can improve it. But you could see that at the time, Koeman wanted to move on to Barcelona because of the opportunity that came up, timing. But also, he had a health scare with a heart murmur. And I think he just felt that, you know, life's too short. I'm going to go for it. At least that seems to be the mood at the time. And he did put so much into the Netherlands that maybe he got them as far as he could. But it will never know, because had he taken to the Euros, we might have found out for sure.
So what are your hopes if the squad does stick together, and apart from the formation, which obviously seems contentious, I've seen some players complaining about it. What are your hopes for Holland at the Euros if things do go reasonably well on kind of internally?
The Netherlands shouldn't have a problem in the group that they're in. It probably is the easiest group of the Euros. Ukraine, Austria, North Macedonia have all got their own little sort of issues. Ukraine might be the biggest rivalry. They should be getting to that group though, especially if three teams might go through from it. Then the last 16 tie should be fairly favourable if they win the group, to play a third place team. And I think that it'll be when they reach the quarterfinals sort of stage, you're going to have a titan there who they're going to have to try and get past. I think that that's where De Boer's tactical unawareness is going to prove costly for the Dutch. And I think that that's as far as the Netherlands would have probably thought about going in the first place anyway. Under Koeman, they might have been one of the favourites for tournament. Not now. It's quarterfinal, semi-finals would be pretty good and amazing progress considering they weren't even at the World Cup and the Euros for this competition. So that will be progress. But at the moment, there's just a general feeling that it's not going to go well at all, even in the group under De Boer, unfortunately.
That is worrying. And if they are going to go far, then it seems like Memphis Depay scored 2 goals against Scotland. Yeah. He seems the guy to do it for them. Is he world-class? Is he a top talent? Is he Holland's best player, would you say?
Well, let's be optimistic. The Netherlands have still got a chance. They've got the players that are all united and together. That's the biggest thing about them. They're not playing for the manager. They're playing for their country and for each other. They really do believe in each other. They've been together for quite a number of years. So that squad unity is what will get them far. In terms of their best players, yeah, Memphis Depay is their key weapon attacking-wise. He is the person I'll be looking for because other attacking players aren't quite up to the same kind of quality as him. Wijnaldum supports him pretty well. But apart from that, Frenkie de Jong, deep-line playmaker, is going to be so important for the Dutch. If they can play one of these bigger teams, him breaking down teams and him playing balls between the lines, that's going to be important. So I think him and Memphis are certainly the two players to look out for in the tournament.
It seems kind of interesting. You mentioned De Jong, and De Jong at Barca has played quite an attacking role this season. He's got a few goals. Mm. And on the other hand, Wijnaldum for Holland, for the Netherlands, seems to play a more attacking role. But for Liverpool, he has quite a strict defensive role. I know he's coming to Barca too, so it'll be quite interesting to see how they dovetail. Do you reckon in tournament they're going to be rotating a bit kind of like Lampard and Gerrard, one goes, one stays, or is it going to be more focused on Wijnaldum and attack?
Yeah, Wijnaldum's going to be the attacking midfielder playing behind Memphis. He seems to be the captain as well for the tournament now in the absence of Van Dijk. He'll be playing attacking midfield, and I think it will be De Jong playing more deep along with probably David Klaas or Martin Delo in midfield, depending who they're playing, if it's more attacking, if it's more defensive. It'll be more flexible in that regard, but De Jong, Wijnaldum, Memphis are all going to be starting games. It'll be De Vrij and De Ligt in defence. It's yet to be seen whether it's a 4-3-3 or 5-3-2. I think De Boer wants to have the flexibility with both. But I don't know if they'll get that far enough to see in all these different formations and players if they can only have these three group games.
Yeah, that's true. And just one last thing. Am I romanticising the Netherlands of the past when I think about, you know, they had better teams and better players, like kind of legends, Bergkamp, Edgar Davids, Mark Overmars? Or am I underrating some of the current squad? I mean, apart from Van Dijk, obviously, who everyone knows is amazing. Yeah. And obviously, he's not going to be at the Euros, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's a good point, because I think Van Dijk was that sort of latest legend. They didn't have many sort of big defensive legends in their repertoire of players in the past. Attacking players are their forte. You're romanticising with those famous sort of four players of the past. But of course, this current generation does have Memphis Depay, and he is a player who, on his day, he's probably one of the best strikers in the world. He's developed his game a lot as a Netherlands striker rather than a winger now. He has lots of parts to his game. Yeah, I think otherwise, apart from that, wingers and attacking midfielders aren't the strength for the Netherlands at the moment. And it could be where it lets them down, especially when trying to get goals against Ukraine, Austria, North Macedonia.
Well, let's see. Good luck to the Netherlands. Thank you, Michael. So Mike's not too positive about the Netherlands' chances with all the trouble in the squad and De Boer being, I mean, it looks like a total failure at this point. Obviously, the tournament will be the ultimate judge of where he ends up and whether the Netherlands can do anything this summer. What do you guys reckon?
I'd say it's quite a strange one, isn't it? Because they were so good under Ronald Koeman. And then obviously, Koeman walked out on them to take over at Barcelona. And things haven't gone too well for him at Barcelona. So you wonder if there's even a chance that a game or two into this tournament, they can put the SOS call out for him, because under De Boer, things, they just don't look like they're working. They drew 2-2 with Scotland the other day, and with all due respect to Scotland, if you have any ambitions of winning a major tournament, you've got to be beating Scotland, even if it is in an inverted commas meaningless pre-tournament friendly.
It's interesting with Koeman. If I was Ronald Koeman, I would have made a deal with Barcelona just now, because he's been in talks with Laporta and they have agreed that he's staying for another year at the club. I would have said, fine, I'm staying, but because of how you mistreated me over the past few weeks, I get to go with Holland and take over at the Euros. I'm sure the Dutch FA would be like, yeah, come back and do this Euros if they could.
I think Michael makes a good point in what he said, like, the man management of the squad, they've bailed him out several times. They lost to Turkey, they drew with Scotland. Things could go pear-shaped if the Netherlands don't get out that group. I mean, they've probably got the easiest group on paper. If they don't get out, they're in real trouble. And we talked about the fans, how the fans are always behind them and they're great to be at a tournament. The fans could actually get on their back here in Amsterdam, and that could cause them problems, and we might start seeing some issues.
I think that it's one of those where home advantage, while Gibbo says it could work against them, I actually think, given the relatively easy nature of their group, it could actually help them get some momentum up, because they could get a good result in their opener and carry that momentum on. Playing in Amsterdam at the Johan Cruyff Arena, that could really work in their favour, in spite of their manager rather than because of him.
Next up is Ukraine. They're a team that in the past, a bit like Switzerland, has stood out to me as a little bit boring, especially since Andriy Shevchenko retired. But Sheva is back, this time in charge of Ukraine, and he's brought them to life. There was nobody better place to talk about this than Andrew Todos. He's the number one source for Ukrainian football news in English and has a podcast called UKR Foot 24. On Twitter, he's at ZoryaLondonSK, which is not how you pronounce that, but it is how you might actually find it on Twitter.
So what do you make of Andriy Shevchenko? Because Ukraine's results have been much better after he's come in, taken over, and things definitely on the rise in Ukraine, football-wise.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, after Euro 2016, where Ukraine finished bottom of their group, 0 points, 0 goals, you couldn't get much worse. So he came in, didn't make the 2018 World Cup qualifier, well, as in didn't qualify. But following that, Nations League, the debut season, won Group B, were League B, got promoted to League A, took the qualifiers by storm for the Euros, top of the group against Portugal, Serbia in that side, and even a resurgent Luxembourg, who aren't, you know, the minnows that they used to be. He's brought in a new style of play, trying to build up from the back, patient sort of attacking football, not so much reliant on the wings as they have been in the past with well-known names, Yarmolenko and Konoplyanka. Those guys are less key than they used to be. Now it's all a focus on midfield, building up through the middle, or if needed, through the wide positions as well. And yeah, overall, there's this sort of stability in the squad. It's organised, and there's a bit of a professionalism that they sort of know what they're doing when attacking, when defending, just a lot more astute and disciplined as well, which is something that Shevchenko's brought in with his Italian backroom staff of Mauro Tassotti, Andre Muldera, who have in the past have had good careers in Italy.
Is it fair to say that he's kind of modernised Ukraine's football? Like, they do now play, like say, bring it out from the back, more sort of short passing than not kind of what we imagine Ukraine to be. Are they, in fact, a much better team than people think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've been pushing the line that they're dark horses for a while now. I've asked Shevchenko and Zinchenko over the past few months, whether they think that the delay to the Euros has been negative or positive. They've remained coy on the fact that the year delay has sort of broken momentum after that 2019 period where the qualifying stages were so positive. 2019 was the first year since Ukraine's independence in 1991 where they went a whole year unbeaten. Delay of the Euros has slightly apparently lost momentum, but they've also in that experience been playing in League A, in the Nations League, against the likes of Germany, Switzerland, Spain. And then they've also played France in their World Cup qualifiers. And if anything, I think that's readied them even better than just going in cold from that Euro qualifying campaign. I mean, ultimately, I think they're on to show a bit more than people expect from them. That's for sure. And they've never got out of the groups at the Euros before. I think they've only won one game out of six that they've had in their whole history. And there's a lot of expectation for them to at least get out the groups and potentially make the quarters would be a huge result.
Yeah, that would be really impressive. And I mean, they finished top of Group B in qualifying. They beat Portugal and they drew in the other game. They smashed Serbia 5-0. Which is, you know, I don't expect to see Ukraine scoring 5 goals. Is that a surprise to you or not?
I mean, to be honest, over the past 2 years or so, Ukraine are far from prolific in their goal scoring. But that match will probably go down in history as one of Ukraine's best ever, like, all-round performances, just in the way they attacked. It was just, like, full of energy and they knew exactly what they were doing with the game plan. Equally, Serbia weren't at their best, but it was just probably the standout result other than the Portugal win from Shevchenko's career as a Ukraine manager so far.
Recently, like you say, they may have lost a little bit of momentum and they've just had 3-1 all draws in a row, Bahrain, Kazakhstan, Finland. Is there anything to read into that? Is he's been trying different tactics or have they just not been performing?
So this year in particular, there's also another result as in they drew 1-1 with France. So altogether, it's 4 1-alls in a row. And in those World Cup qualifiers, he switched tactics slightly because he didn't have his regular wingers to choose from. So he decided instead of playing 4 at the back, which he usually does, he played 5 at the back with the wing backs being those wingers that he'd usually play. And I guess that was stunted the attacking flow slightly, although it made them more solid at the back, despite the fact that the results against Finland, which was actually lost due to a rash, crazy mistake at the back, which gave away a penalty and a red card and ultimately 1-1. And then against Kazakhstan, just Ukraine were broken, slightly weakened side experimenting again. And then against Bahrain as well, that was literally none of Ukraine's big players. So Zinchenko, Malinovsky, Yaremchuk, all the ones that play in the big leagues weren't available because their seasons were still going on with their clubs. So this was just mainly domestic based players that, like Shakhtar, Dynamo, some other teams. And I mean, Shevchenko didn't look too worried in his press conference following that match. He said, "We're just here to build up some fitness today." Overall, luckily, Ukraine drew that game in the very death, and I wouldn't look too much into it. But at the end of the day, Portugal won one game in Euro 2016 and won the entire tournament. So maybe if Ukraine can carry on 1-1s throughout the campaign, you never know.
Yeah, on Shakhtar, you mentioned Shakhtar, there's two players that are quite interesting, that the Brazilian kind of nationalized Ukrainians in Junior Moraes and Marlos. How are they doing with Ukraine? I mean, Moraes, we've seen him, Junior, in the Champions League score a lot of goals, but he's only got one so far for Ukraine in 11 appearances.
Yeah, he's not impressed for Ukraine. And he's actually out of the tournament with a knee injury. So he's out for the next like 6 to 9 months. And a lot of people think that's a blessing because it's brought in an extra younger player, Dovbik, who's a lot more athletic, just seems to give a bit more an attack compared to Marias. And Marlos, the other Brazilian naturalized Ukrainian player, he's had one of his probably worst seasons for his club, like ever, in the past year in terms of goals and assists as well. And despite that, when he has been in form, he's never really been able to replicate that for Ukraine. He played against Bahrain, played okay, but I would say he's far from certain starter in that side.
And Zinchenko is probably the stand-up name. Obviously, everyone knows he's a Man City Premier League champion. Is he going to play in midfield for Ukraine? Because obviously, at City, is often at left-back.
Well, that's sort of a question in itself, because Zinchenko plays a centre-mid, basically box-to-box for Ukraine, using the defensive tactics and responsibilities that Pep sort of instilled into him, which has helped in the fact when he needs to recover, help out in defence if needed, but then he also can use his strengths attacking wise with his passing, and even gets the occasional goal for Ukraine as well. However, there is talk that potentially he might be shifted slightly out to the left as a left winger. You know, obviously, as he plays left back for Man City, it sort of might help in that sense. And then they can bring in an extra midfielder in Shaparenko, who's slightly similar to Zinchenko in that box-to-box range. And then it might just shore up the problem, the fact that Ukraine's left wing position is currently sort of up in arms, as in there's not like a concrete candidate to start there.
One final question. You know, we know about Zinchenko, but who don't we know about? Which player do you think, or players playing for Ukraine, do you think that after the tournament, people will be talking about them? They'll be saying, oh, maybe they should move to to big European side or players that just really stand out and shine?
Well, I think a lot of people probably do know him, but if you don't follow Serie A, you probably might not. But Ruslan Malinovsky is probably the talisman in the team, tearing up with Atalanta towards the end of this season. With he got 15 goals or assists in his last 10 games. Quite emphatic finish to the season. Everyone's hoping he can continue that form into the Euros. Also, Roman Yaremchuk, who's our centre forward, he's probably the first striker that comes anywhere close to Shevchenko in terms of being impactful in games and scoring goals and stuff. I think he's only got 6 goals for Ukraine so far in like about 20 appearances, but he seems to be the most coherent centre forward that they've had, because they've had a lot of lumps up top since he retired in 2012. And then finally, Ilya Zabarny, who's an 18-year-old centre-back for Dynamo Kyiv, literally 0 to 100 the season this year. He made his debut for Dynamo Kyiv in September of 2020. Then he made his Champions League debut that same month. Then he made his Ukraine debut a month after, just 18. And he's been starting in all the big games since. So one to look out for sure, after a treble winning season with Dynamo Kyiv.
That was a pretty conclusive summary from Andrew. Any thoughts on Ukraine from you guys?
They're a side that like to play a passing game, short passing midfield in the triangles. I know Vieri touched on it in a previous pod about Malinovsky providing assists for them. Like you said, I don't think they're going to root up any trees or anything, Ukraine. There'll be a solid side with Shevchenko. I can't see them performing much, though, if I'm honest.
I mean, I think that given the nature of the group, they do have a good chance of getting out of the group, though. As you say, they're no great shakes. It's not like the sort of vintage teams with Timoshuk and Shevchenko and Rebrov and those kind of names that conjure up these incredible memories of wavy-haired European footballers back in the day. But I think that Ukraine will get out of the group, but I'm not sure they'll progress much further than the round of 16.
I wonder if we're being too nostalgic with that kind of stuff. I mean, Sergei Rebrov, how good actually was he? Maybe the guys in this squad are better than Sergei Rebrov, and we just haven't seen it yet because we haven't watched much of Ukraine. And there's also 11 Dynamo Kyiv players in the squad, which must be good for team harmony when there's not too many other clubs who are as highly represented as Dynamo Kyiv, and certainly not in one squad. Like Chelsea and Man City have 15 players each at the Euros. Man United have 12, I think. And then Kyiv is next.
Yeah, well, you've got to think as well, that kind of thing does help at major international tournaments in other sports. I think it helps, as you say, with team harmony, but also in the setup. And people know the way that other players play, so they're used to playing with them at club level. Argentina always sort of outperform their means at Rugby World Cups because a lot of their players play for the same club in Argentina. That's a big thing that I think will count in their favour at this tournament.
That's interesting insight. I always wondered whether if Jose Mourinho had got what he wanted and Steven Gerrard came to Chelsea back in 2005, I think it was, whether for England they would have suddenly been a much better combination if they were working together at club level, knowing when one was going to go, one was going to stay, instead of just meeting up every 4 months with England and both of them trying to do the same job.
Yeah, it's a good point there. I think England's fortunes would have probably changed quite a bit. But I don't know if you had the Rio Ferdinand clip a few years back with him, Gerrard and Lampard talking to Jake Humphreys, and they talked about the little cliques that they had in the squad. So you had a Man United table, then you had sort of the Chelsea table, the Liverpool table, and then you had everybody else who was part of the England squad. And the United lads would usually just sit together, and it was they didn't want to give their secrets away to Lampard or Gerrard, etc. So I think it can also be the opposite end of this, where you've got a Kyiv clique, so to speak, in Ukraine.
They'll need a massive table to fit all them around.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll find one. But they won't want to give secrets away to sort of Shakhtar Donetsk, and seems to rival them in the league. So they want to keep that competitive edge going. It's almost club over country in some aspects.
Yeah, I think that Ukraine is maybe a country, though, that is more country over club, though. I can understand exactly what you're saying, but obviously, I'm sure if you ask Ukrainians, the rivalry between all the clubs over there, Dynamo Kyiv and Shakhtar and all the other clubs, is going to be fierce. However, I don't think it's necessarily maybe as big a thing as the rivalry that was between, say, at the 2006 World Cup between Liverpool and Chelsea, for example, where those players really didn't like each other and the clubs really didn't like each other. While there may be a rivalry with that, I think that maybe this Ukrainians strike me as quite a patriotic bunch and who come together at those kind of major tournaments, as opposed to maybe what would have happened with the England back in the day. I mean, that's just me I could be talking complete and utter gibberish here, but they strike me as...
usually are.
I usually am, and that is true. But they strike me as someone who would actually pull together as opposed to split apart during a tournament.
I mean, we say this, okay, but Ukraine were the first team to get eliminated from Euro 2016. They have Germany, Poland and Northern Ireland in their group. They were the first, one of the first teams out. So this time round, Netherlands, North Macedonia, Austria. It's a tough opening game against the Dutch. It could go the same way as 2016.
You backed Finland in the other group, and I'm going to stick my neck out for Ukraine, and I'm going to say they're going to go further than people think. Moving on to Austria. They're the only team in this group we didn't bring in an expert for today, which seems a bit harsh in retrospect, but don't worry, we will bring one on soon. For now, you can make do with us. I've been to Vienna, it's nice. Not much happens there, but they like schnitzel, chocolate cake and coffee. They also have a very, very good player in David Alaba, who recently left Bayern Munich and has signed for Real Madrid. The problem is, they don't seem to know where to play him. Defence, midfield, left-back, centre-back, left-wing, centre-mid. He's the best player, so you can see why they're sticking him in midfield, but it's not his natural position.
Yeah, well, against England the other night, they certainly showed that they're a very tough opponent. They didn't pull any punches, even though it was a pre-tournament friendly. I'm sure Jack Grealish woke up with some... I know he wears very small shin pads anyway, but I'm pretty sure his shins would have been extremely bruised. There was a few thumping tackles in there. But Austria...
Can you blame him? If you look at Jack Grealish, he's not like the sort of person you want to kick.
I'm not sure, you know. I think that maybe I'm being a bit harsh there on Jack. I think just because he's got... I mean, I've got quite long hair at the moment, and I think maybe in this sort of floppy hair brigade, I'm on Jack's side. However, I do think that Austria will struggle because, as we saw against England, obviously you have Marcel Sabitzer and David Alaba in central midfield, who are two excellent players, and you can see why they play Alaba there, even though it's not his actual position, just to keep him involved in the game. He's so quick and direct and has a wand of a left foot. But I think where they're going to come unstuck is goal scoring. I sent you a WhatsApp during the game, actually, Rick, saying that it's a real shame that Ashley Barnes wasn't given Austrian citizenship because I believe his grandma was born there and then emigrated to the United Kingdom. And Ashley Barnes, you know, you laugh, but he would be a real nuisance up top for a team like Austria, a player who's never going to probably get a cap with England. He would be a great addition to an Austria team, and I'm sure that they would be better with him in it as well.
Do you think the Austrian fans are sort of banging the drum how the English fans are banging the drum about getting Arteta to play for England?
I'm not sure. I know that I don't know too much about Austrian politics, but I know that it was quite a controversial subject when he applied for his Austrian passport, and ultimately they decided that within their nationality laws, he didn't fit into the requirements. And as someone who has benefited from a grandparent rule of getting another passport, I do feel for him. So I'm not sure that the Austrians are like the English or the Italians, who are quite happy to take players born in other countries with links to other countries. I think that they're a landlocked nation, so maybe they're a very inward looking nation as well when it comes to that.
You don't fancy Sasa Kalajic up front? Big man, had a big impact since coming into the squad. He's 6'7" tall. He's the Austrian Peter Crouch.
Yeah, tallest player in the Bundesliga, I believe, last season. In the German league, where, you know, they're not small in that part of the world, that's quite the accolade to have, I think. He was all right against England. He put himself about a lot, but the good touch for a big man cliche didn't seem to apply to him from what I saw. But I'm just judging him on 90 minutes in a friendly game where he had Tyrone Mings and Connor Cody booting him every time he got the ball as well. So I'd like to see a bit more of him before I pass judgment. He's obviously a great weapon to have, you know, David Alaba's left foot and Sabitzer's right foot putting in free kicks and corners. To have a player that tall, you distract the defence, even if you're not winning the header, to leave room for others.
From what I have read about him, people do say he does have good feet for a big man. They can link up with the player and he's not just isolated in the area. But I agree, you know, I didn't see too much from him against England. And Austria in general have been worse than I think they are. Like, in my head, they're like a kind of... you know, Switzerland, they're not too bad. They always seem to be there, but they're not. I mean, they qualified for World Cup 98, Euro 2008 and Euro 2016, and they didn't win a single game at any of them, didn't qualify for any other tournaments in that period. So, you know, maybe they're not good at all. Then they have apparently improved a lot over the last decade. And I think that's because they've got a lot of Bundesliga players, and that league's improved a lot too. 21 of their 26-man squad play in the Bundesliga, the German Bundesliga, that is, so because the Austrian league's also called the Bundesliga. And they like to press because, you know, in the Bundesliga, pressing is all the rage. So, you know, maybe this time around, Austria are going to be a bit stronger.
I think we're forgetting they've also got Marko Arnautović up front. Former West Ham decided to chase the money in Shanghai.
I think you'll find he went for medals, he said. He was going to win trophies in China, I think, is what he actually said.
The highly coveted Shanghai Cup.
According to his stats, he's got 3 goals this season in Chinese Super League. So
a hat trick.
Yeah, I think that as well, I should point out before when I kind of said I made a swiping generalisation about Austrian politics and their attitudes towards giving out passports earlier. I should apologise first of all for that because I don't particularly know anything about it. So it was negligent on my part. But one of the things that you have to say with the Austria team is that, just on a complete aside, is they are actually a great example of one of maybe, if not the most multicultural team at the tournament, in that a lot of their players, the vast majority of their squad, are actually sons of immigrants to Austria, predominantly from the Balkans, who left there during the Balkans War. And it's really interesting to see this generation of players come through. You know, even you could add Mateo Kovacic to that, who obviously plays for Croatia, but he was born in Austria. You've got Marko Arnautović there. David Alaba, of course, who I think his mum was a Filipino beauty queen and his dad Nigerian royalty. Not the email kind either, an actual Nigerian royal, I think, as well. So they've got a really multicultural team who are, you know, who will be interesting to watch. And it's also with those kind of teams, it's really interesting, much like the Swiss as well, who are another multicultural team, is it's really interesting to see, you know, do they, things that I like, because I'm a bit of a geek like this, you know, do they sing the national anthem? Do they make the decision to play for Austria because they feel Austrian, or whether it's because they feel some gratitude to the country because they helped their family escape there, or those kind of things are really interesting as well. So I think that's one thing to keep an eye on for Austria as well.
One thing that the Austrians do probably have the advantage over, though, is they did actually face North Macedonia in qualifying, you know, came out with a 4-1 victory, and then also 1-2-1 on match day 9. So you could say they've almost got one up on North Macedonia. So you would expect them to get 3 points against.
Speaking of North Macedonia, next up is North Macedonia. To be honest, I didn't know much about them, so I went to find someone who did, and that someone is Jordan Lewis Butler. He works for the BBC, and he's helping compile the internal guidebook for the BBC for the tournament. Lineker, Shearer, Ferdinand, Fabregas, Klinsmann, quite a lot of what they say about North Macedonia they may well have absorbed from Jordan's work. And here he is.
So you, with the BBC, have been researching North Macedonia, Slovakia, Hungary and Ukraine. Why those teams?
That's a very good question. I suppose because they're the lesser teams in the group. And actually, to tell you the truth, I'm not actually working on the live shows for the tournament. So we compile this massive book, 800 pages, on every player, every manager, every team. And that gets given, it's like an in-house sort of guidebook that goes to the commentators, the pundit, the editors of the shows, everyone in between. Normally, the focus is on the teams that, like England, France, the big teams who will be on TV the most. And because I'm actually doing Wimbledon, the summer tennis tournaments after this guidebook's published, I've been given all the minnows, if you like, and well, apart from Ukraine, all the lesser teams. I don't even know how many of them are going to actually be shown on TV. I think the 3 Ukraine games, the group stage games, are on ITV. So that's basically why I've been given them. But also, I quite enjoy it, to be honest. Get stuck in and find out about players you've never really heard about before, or some of the backstories behind these teams. It's great. It's good fun.
Well, it's good news for us, because we can pick your brains about North Macedonia.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm an expert, but I've spent the best part of the last month sort of digging in and finding as much information as I can. So I suppose, as far as you're concerned, I should know my stuff, hopefully. Anyway, we'll see what happens when we get into it. But
well, the Austria coach Franco Foda said North Macedonia have very, very good players, and I read that and I was like, do they?
Yeah, to be honest, I was looking at this and the squad itself isn't deep as you'd expect for a minor nation, but the starting 11's pretty, it's quite good. There's the keeper plays in Spain. You've got the right back who is now, he was at Sporting Lisbon for 3 years. He's now playing it for Dynamo Zagreb, who won League and Cup. The centre mid, I think he's probably the best player, Ademi. He's Croatian, born in Croatia, but of Albanian descent and Macedonian grandparents. So I think he won 3 caps for Croatia, but they're all friendly caps. So he ended up, he was snubbed for the World Cup in 2014, maybe, or whatever that was. Was it Brazil 2014?
Yeah.
He was overlooked. And then so he decided to represent North Macedonia. He's probably their best. I'd say he's probably their best player. Box to box, sort of breaks things up in the middle of the park. They've got a lad called Elmas, who's 21 from Napoli. Hasn't got many minutes in Serie A. I think he fell out with Gattuso, sort of comes off the bench every now and again for 10 minutes here and there. So that's a bit of an issue for them. He's not playing regularly, but he's really good, highly rated.
Can be helpful sometimes, you know, when if a team is exhausted and this guy hasn't got many minutes under his belt, but he's going to come in fresh to the tournament.
Exactly that. He scored the winner against Germany that we were talking about earlier. He's hopefully coming in fresh and he should be in fire and ready to go. Obviously, we talked about him earlier, Bardi. Ennis Bardi, who plays for Levante, and you'll have seen quite a bit. And he's quite a diminutive little midfielder, but he's busy. You know, he likes to win the ball, hike the pitch, good at set pieces, strikes the ball really well, nice technique. He recently got diagnosed with COVID, so hopefully he can get through that and make it to the tournament. Fingers crossed for him.
He's a nice player, yeah.
He's a really technical, nice player, and he was linked with Arsenal when Arteta came in at first, because I think he's obviously keeps his eye on the Spanish league and he knows a few of the Spanish players. I think when Ozil left, they were looking at maybe bringing him in to replace Ozil. So obviously he is pretty highly rated. So hopefully he can get and have a good tournament and see what happens to him. And then the main man, really, I know I said Adeyemi's the key player, but the main man, Goran Pandev, 37. He's supposed to be retiring after the tournament, but
he's 38 in July. He's like,
so yeah, obviously being that old, bless him, he never really makes 90 minutes. He sort of does about an hour and then probably turns to the bench and does the old take me off gaffer. The Genoa head coach has already said, I want to try and persuade him to stay on because he's such a good player.
And he's iconic, isn't he?
He's been in Italy for most of his career. He won the Champions League with Inter Milan, a few Coppa Italias with Lazio and Napoli as well. So he's like a legend. He's like the most capped player. He's scored the most goals. He's the captain. He sort of plays a little bit deeper in the sort of 10 role, bit of a free role, floats around, lovely left foot. They need him to have a good tournament, basically. And he always pops up with important goals as well. He scored the winner against Georgia in the playoffs to get them to the Euros. And he scored the opener in Germany as well. So he's a big game player. And if he has a good tournament, then they'll have a good tournament, basically. And obviously, I haven't even mentioned Alioski yet, who plays for Leeds in the Premier League. He can be erratic. He's a bit of a hothead, but he gets down the left wing quite well. And the only issue they've got now is their main centre forward was that he did his knee playing for Udinese in Serie A. So he's out. And he wasn't a goal scorer, mate. He didn't score many goals. I think he probably got about four last season, but a bit of a target man and a focal point for everyone else to play off. And so without him, the options up front are pretty limited. There's a couple of lads playing in Cyprus, one lad on loan in second division of France who hadn't scored many goals, and another guy has got 13 caps and no goals. So that's what I was saying earlier about North Macedonia, is that once you get past the key players in the first 11, the squad depth isn't really there. And there's a lot of lads, some playing in Hungary, some in Cyprus, some in North Macedonia, they're not the strongest leagues in Europe, to be honest. So obviously their quality could be questioned, but the team spirit's there. They're really together, really proud. They'll all fight for each other. And obviously, like we've already mentioned, they beat Germany 2-1. So they've got the potential to upset a few big teams if they can click into gear.
So that's we'll something I was interested in the team spirit, because they do seem like quite a united group. And there was an issue where there was infighting, not between the players, but between them against the FA, because the FA weren't backing the coach, Angelovski, and the players kicked off against the FA to kind of support him. Is that all simmered down, you reckon?
Not, I don't think so. Because obviously Angelovski is he's their most successful ever manager. And he's the longest serving manager they've ever had. And they seem to flitter around. They're hire and fire and people don't do so well. John Toshack managed them for a little bit a few years back. Didn't do very well. He was sacked. Probably paid him quite a lot to do that as well. And then, so he came in. He's only ever managed in Macedonia, but he did well there. So it was a bit of a punt by the FA, but he's got them here. And he's fostered this sort of team spirit, this togetherness, and he's done really, really well. But his reward for getting them to the finals was a paltry 6-month contract extension. So he didn't even say, why don't you take us to the World Cup? Why don't you take us to the next Euros? Gave him 6 months. So obviously, like you said, the players kicked off and they're sort of almost playing for him as well at this tournament. So if they can have a good tournament, it's almost show of faith in the manager. I think one of the key reasons was the change of hierarchy at the FA. I can't remember the name of the guy who came in, but he favours the under 21 manager. So there's a guy called, I think he's called Bobby Matrevsky. Don't quote me on that, but he's almost already said, we're going to kind of look to move Angelovski on and bring in this other guy. So that's probably the reason behind the 6-month contract, although it's upset a lot of people, even the fans as well.
Well, you told me earlier, actually, before we went on air, they've also upset the fans with it by getting a shirt which isn't the right colour red.
Yeah, so that's another issue they've got. If there's not enough politics going on behind the scenes, obviously they've they've gone and got this new shirt, this new unveiled, they unveiled it this week ahead of the tournament, and it's like a lot of excitement there. But then a photo emerged, it was leaked online, and the fans were deeply upset because it's the wrong colour red. So Macedonia, you might have seen the kits before, they're normally quite a bit wacky, and obviously the flag is red and yellow, so there's a lot of yellow on there, but it's predominantly red kits they wear at home. And this is more maroon, so almost a bit West Ham or Aston Villa sort of colours, claret almost, like a Burnley. And they're not happy at all. So I don't expect many people in the stands to be wearing that shirt. And I think they'll be wearing it at the tournament, though. So hopefully it's not a bad omen for them.
Speaking of being happy, what would make them happy? What would success kind of look like for North Macedonia at this tournament?
The manager's already come out, Angelovski, and said they don't expect to qualify from the group. So he sort of played things down a little bit. But I think secretly, given that we've already talked about it, they beat Germany 2-1 and raised a lot of eyebrows there. I think deep down, they think they probably can cause a few upsets, and I think success for them would be a win. If they could get a win at a major tournament, that's a landmark achievement for them as a nation, because it's their first ever tournament. They're the lowest team to ever qualify, the lowest FIFA ranked team to ever qualify for a European Championships, and they came in through the back door through the Nations League because they didn't finish too high up in the qualifying group. But if they could even get a win, I think they'd be really happy. I don't know if you saw it recently, but I'm not entirely sure if it. I thought it was fake, but I don't think it is. Netherlands head coach Frank de Boer gave an interview in the back of a taxi, where he was asked for his predictions on the group games, and he listed all the results, and he was like, "We're going to beat Macedonia 3-0. We're going to beat them 2-1," and that kind of thing. If they got hold of that footage, I can imagine that would, they wouldn't need motivation, but that would provide the kind of spark. You'd be like, well, we're not going to get beat 3-0 by the Netherlands. We're actually going to beat you. That kind of arrogance, I don't think would play well with them. So I think if they can click into gear and they've got all the key players on the pitch, I think then they're a dangerous team to be underestimated for sure.
Like with Andrew, I should say we recorded that interview with Jordan a few days ago. And since then, the North Macedonian FA have backtracked on the shirts. And they're going to wear proper red ones. None of this West Ham or Burnley burgundy. So North Macedonia snuck into the tournament by winning the lower segment of the Nations League. And to be honest, this looks like the worst group for me, and they are a sizable part of that reason. No offence meant, but Georgia are probably the toughest team they face to get here, and that's not exactly particularly tough, is it? But Dave, you backed Finland, as I said earlier, when me and Joe were signing their death warrant. So what are your feelings about North Macedonia?
Again, I think they're a nation where they could win some heart. People will want to see them do well because they are newcomers, underdogs, whatever you want to call them. Some of the Leeds fans might be supporting Alioski, so they'll have a fan base on that. I think they'll be a tricky side, like Albania at the last Euros. They'll be a team trying to do well, probably won't do well, but they'll be a tough opponent.
Yeah, I think that Gibbo's right in that they will most certainly be like everyone's second team, because it's their first ever tournament, because it's a tiny country with a very small population. As you say, Leeds fans will be getting behind Alioski. I think everyone can get behind the story of Goran Pandev, who's about 47 years old and still banging in the goals in Serie A, scoring the goals to get them to the tournament. And of course, they got one of the best flags, I think, in the world, not even in world football, just in the world. It's a fantastic flag. I've been to Skopje as well. Beautiful place, incredibly warm in August when I was there for the Super Cup game between Real Madrid and Manchester United a couple of years ago. Very nice place, very nice people as well. So I think that they're someone that everyone can get behind. I'm not sure that they will get through the group. They might be a step too far for them, but I think that everyone will certainly be cheering them on against the likes of Austria and co, and hoping against hope that, much like with Finland, I think that if they can get a point, it would be a cracking result for them at the tournament.
That's it from us. Remember to sign up to our Euro 2020 Fantasy League, link in the description. Don't make me read out that code again. We are on Twitter, Inside Euros Pod, at Instagram at the very same. Like, subscribe, rate us on iTunes. We'd be grateful. But most importantly, come back soon for Group D.